understand there's sort of a movement and an interest among many people in the community of changing what we're doing with our library structure. There's going to be a ballot issue that's coming up probably in the fall to determine how we should be organized and running our program. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, certainly, Frank. Thanks for the question. You know, I think the conversation has been going on in Boulder and its environs for at least the last three decades. If one editorial in the Daily Camera recently is correct, it's been going on for over 50 years, this conversation. But the question really is a question of providing sustainable funding for library services. So over the past 6 years, I believe, we have been researching and talking with council, city council, about the idea of formation of a library district. The Library Commission in 2018, in the context of the master plan, determined that a library district was the most fair and equitable way of providing sustainable funding for our library. And so we have been in that conversation really since. Council has asked numerous times for more information, which we have provided to them, and the conversation is ongoing. I believe we meet with City Council again March 15th and again on April 4th, are the currently scheduled council meetings to discuss this.
How is it organized now, and how will it be organized if a new district is created? What will be the difference?
The library currently is a municipal library, so we are a department of the city. Much like fire is and police is and parks and recreation, we are a general fund department. So we are supported by taxes, sales taxes that come in through the city, and then city council and the city manager create a budget each year, and they determine how much money that the library will get in that fiscal year. A district financing would be, a district is a subdivision of the state. It's an independent government. It taxes based on property tax. And so property tax revenues would flow to the library district and a library district board of trustees, which city council and the county commissioners would appoint, would make determinations about how the money is spent. That's the primary difference. The library board of trustees, which again, council and county commissioners would appoint, would make decisions about policy and take fiscal responsibility. But they are a subdivision of the state and an independent entity. So we would no longer be, the library would no longer be in competition for dollars with parks and recreation, transportation, planning and development services, fire, police, you name it.
You'd have a number next to your name, and that number would trigger how much money you would get, and you wouldn't have anybody else that could lay claim to that money.
Yeah, that is correct. So the taxes that were raised for a library district would have to be expended for library purposes. It's a dedicated tax, essentially.
Okay. Tell us, is that a kind of a crazy Boulder idea, far out idea? or is that something that's done actually quite a bit in Colorado and particularly along the Front Range? Tell us about that.
Yeah, it is not a crazy Boulder idea. The majority of public libraries in the state of Colorado, I believe 57 of them are already districts. There are 14 communities in Colorado that serve communities of 100,000 residents or more. Nine of those are districts with dedicated funding. Three, including Boulder. So Boulder, Denver Public Library, and Longmont are actively engaged in discussions about forming a district. And then only two who serve that group are not actively, and one has in the past. So yeah, it's a very common form of governance for public libraries in the state of Colorado. Most all of the libraries on the Front Range, from Fort Collins to Pueblo, including Adams County, Douglas County, Arapahoe County, all of these are library districts and formed, you know, at various times over the last 30, 40 years.
Tell us some of the places where such library districts exist already.
Gosh. Weld County, Adams County, Fort Collins, Larimer County, Douglas County, Arapahoe County, Pueblo, Colorado Springs, El Paso County, mostly the entirety of the Front Range, with the exception of Denver and Jefferson County and Boulder County. So Jefferson County has a dedicated tax as a county library, Denver Public Library, like Boulder, is currently investigating forming a district with dedicated funding in order to sustain sustainable library services.
I have with me this morning David Farnan on a public affair. We're discussing the Boulder Library, which on its first bounce might not seem that interesting or exciting. It's not as exciting as discussing the war overseas, but it has an enormous impact on this community. And there's a big decision going to come up probably in the fall about whether we are going to change the way that we fund our library. We've had things that we've hoped to do and promised to do through our present structure, but because of financial reasons, we've not been able to do. Is that right? I mean, if an example of that would be we have been going to build the North Library, and we haven't done it forever. So there's a branch library which is due there, and some other things that are due. Maybe you could tell us about that financial problem and some of the places that we might be able, things that might change if we do this new library approach.
Yeah, so we are in the process currently of planning to build a library in North Boulder, but there are a lot of different things that the library master plan from 2018 or prior, 2008 master plan as well, committed to. And that's looking at levels of service throughout Boulder region. So there's been talk of the library in Gun Barrel, obviously the talk of the library in North Boulder, looking at doing outreach, early literacy outreach to underserved populations within Boulder. It focuses on primarily the Latinx population at present. The pandemic hit the library pretty hard. And so all of our libraries are currently on reduced hours. The Carnegie Library for Local History is closed and remains closed. The Canyon Theater remains closed. So there are a lot of things that we have done in the past that are not currently available to the public. The reduction of hours is one that impacts people's ability to come into the library. And then I think one of the major things in terms of the library district, and at least the proponents of that library district advocate for, is funding the physical backlog of building issues. So all of our buildings are quite old. All of the library buildings are quite old. And all of them have a lot of maintenance issues associated with them. The facilities, the City of Boulder facilities master plan was recently laid out in front of council. And it's a heavy lift, right? There's a lot of cost associated with getting our buildings up to code, centered around green energies rather than outdated forms of heating and cooling a building, as well as just their simple operation. So there's a lot of things that would have to be addressed in a library district. And I believe the proponents of the library district would like to see all of those things happen.
How is the staffing now in light of the pandemic?
Yeah, so in 2020, we laid off quite a number of staff members, which is why the buildings, the library buildings had to close and stay closed. The branches had to stay closed for such a long time, and primarily why we're on reduced hours now. So we cut over $1 million worth of staffing in 2020, and we brought some of that back in 2022. And I am proud of the fact that we have opened up, you know, the Nobo Corner Library and the Meadows Library and George Reynolds Library here in 2022. We opened them up in January. They are on reduced hours, and we still have staffing shortages throughout the library, about $700,000 or so annually in shortages. So where we are with numbers, we're down from where we were prior to the pandemic. And frankly, Frank, I should tell you, we're down significantly from where we were 20 years ago, the library, which didn't have a Nobo Corner Library, operated on significantly more hours. We had 92 full-time equivalent staff. Presently, we're operating, I believe, at around 73 or 74 full-time equivalent staff.
Tell us why and how that would change if we changed into a library district.
Well, again, the library district is contingent upon the voters approving of a tax. Should they approve of a tax, and they would have to set it at a certain level. The assumption, I think, going in is that they would fund the library adequate to fulfill the 2018 master plan. The 2018 master plan, one of the first recommendations is that the library, main library and the main branches would operate at a similar level of service and access. So the same number of hours. That's not true for any of our libraries today, but prior to the pandemic, I believe the main library was open between 66 and 68 hours a week. It has had longer hours in the past, but the intention at the master plan was, we heard from the public, and we heard overwhelmingly from the public, they would like them to restore the services that the library had done across all the branches, so that every branch offered the same level of access that the main library did. So that would require increased staffing levels across the board. The master plan also calls for opening a gun barrel library, adequately staffing the Carnegie Library for local history and the Canyon Theater so that they can be served by the public. I mean, they can serve the public and allow for the public to come in and use those as they'd like. As you know, right now, the Carnegie Library for Local History is closed. You can make an appointment. I think we have a few appointments every week. But yeah, prior to the pandemic, we were open 5 days a week. And the ideal would be that it's open to the public when they want it to be open.
Again, this is a public affair. And my guest this morning is David Farnan, who's the head of the Boulder Public Library. And when you mentioned the North Boulder Branch Library, that's been floating around in one form or another for a long, long time. Would there be, in your view, a much greater likelihood that that North Boulder Branch would finally get built and open and kept open? And if so, why?
Yeah, so the North Boulder Library has been a dream of that community since the 90s. We are committed to delivering on that promise. So in 2017, taxpayers paid about $5 million for construction of the library in North Boulder. We subsequently contributed another $5 million from donations and from the library fund to build that library. And so we are committed presently to get to contract and build that library. The city has expressed an interest in funding staffing and the materials and furniture and everything that goes in that library. We'll see that hopefully in 2023. As many people are quick to point out, there are no guarantees, but I feel relatively confident that we're going to be able to open that North Boulder Library in 2023. And I think even though we had to make pretty profound cuts, most of those cuts to the design of the building came about through the pandemic. So, you know, disruptions in the supply chain meant increased cost of steel, increased cost of windows, increased cost of everything. So the building is somewhat reduced, but I believe it's going to be a library building that we can all be, the community certainly will be very proud of. And it'll be the first public building in North Boulder. So that's going to be a huge boon for us and for the city and for everyone in North Boulder. I think they're going to find it to be a great community asset, a gathering place, really, for the
community. Is that irrespective of what happens with the assuming upcoming vote on whether we're going to have a district?
Well, Frank, I wish I had a crystal ball. I wish I had a crystal ball. You know, if the district, the way in which the district is planned, I can guarantee you that if the taxpayers were to vote for that tax, we could do it. The city budget is one that goes from year to year, so we cannot guarantee future funding for anything. The same reasons that may have caused a decline in revenue due to the pandemic means that we closed all the branches, right? So we did have to close all the branches during the pandemic for quite some time. So I don't know that I can guarantee anything with regard to it. We are working our hardest as we can to make the building meet the budget. And then we're hopeful that in 2023, the city will approve of a budget which allows for funding for that North Boulder Library, meaning we have to be able to staff it. We have to be able to put books and furniture and everything in it. And I'm hopeful. I'm always hopeful. And I, you know, we'll be bringing forward to city council, you know, operating expenses of about $1 million in order to run that library.
Well, what happens to this if you go to a library system that we talked about earlier, where you change it from one that to one that has taxing authority to get money.
To the North Boulder Library, Frank?
Yes.
Well, in the North Boulder Library, I mean, the Library Board of Trustees. So again, the Board of Trustees would be appointed by City Council and the County Commissioners. They would have control over the finances of a library, and they could determine how they wanted to staff and fund that building. So as it is, we're going forward with a building that won't be entirely finished. The community had asked for a makerspace. We do not have the funds to do that makerspace currently.
Can you tell us what makerspace is?
Yeah, the makerspace, you know, so we opened a makerspace in the downtown library with a grant. I believe that was in 2015. It's a high-tech space with 3D printers, laser cutters, CNC routers. It's a high-tech space in one area. And then in another area of the space, it's a professional grade woodworking shop. So at this point, we've been open for roughly 6 years. It's been a wild success and really been great for Boulder. I believe at this, I mean, I'd have to go back and check the numbers, but I think at our, you know, we've had well over 100 small businesses launch from that space. I believe there are 12 to 15 patents pending from that space. It's a, you know, it's a self-guided learning where we offer technologists in the space who can help you with your project or helping you prototype a product that you want to take to market. It's also a place where people do a lot of arts, a lot of, you know, everything from stained glass to weavings to making board games. You can do pretty much anything and everything you want.
The main headquarters for the library also has a place for theater or for lectures that isn't used very much now as well. Is there a reason to hope if we could get into this library structure we've been discussing that that would change?
Yeah, the Canyon Theater is a great asset, and you're absolutely right. It is underutilized. Unfortunately, due to the pandemic, we had to lay off the staff who were the minimal staff that we had associated with that space. It is the master plan, the 2018 master plan, calls for reopening the space and having adequate staffing so that it can be utilized by the public. So the idea really behind it is that we create a platform for the public and there are staff there that can support your needs. So whether you want to give a talk about healthcare or you want to get together and lecture with your friends, talk about whatever it is you want, or you have a rock band or, you know, you name it, you want to show a movie, you would come in and have access to
you are listening
like you
to KGNU
meeting room. And you could invite 213 of your friends to come and participate in that event. That is the goal of the master plan. You know, we're a long way away from that currently, but I believe that with the funding proposed in the library district is enough to cover that master plan goal.
Again, this is a public affair. We've had David Farnan, the head of the Boulder Library System. Do you expect that with the new system that we might have something in nearby areas that would really thrive with that? For example, NIWAT or some place like that might be able to benefit from it.
Yeah, the prospect of a library, certainly in Gun Barrel and then also in NIWAT, if they are part of the district. You know, at this point, we haven't drawn the boundaries. But the library, I mean, we track everything. So we know that Gun Barrel residents have wanted a library for a long time. Currently, the majority of them drive from Gun Barrel to the Meadows Branch Library over off of on Baseline, off the Parkway. That's an 18 to 20 minute drive. Ideally, I mean, the library master plan ties in with a lot of other goals for creating 15 minute neighborhoods, and that there would be a library, you know, within walking or biking distance for most of the people who live in that Gun Barrel community. And the library district plan, should NIWAT choose to be incorporated into the map and want a library, the proponents of the district would also like to have a library in NIWAT. So yeah, again, creating a neighborhood library where people in that community could walk or bike or make a short trip to the NIWAT or the Gun Barrel Library.
Thank you very much, Dave. We appreciate the information and The only thing I would add to this as we wrap this up, one of the county commissioners sent out a memo wanting to have people talk to them about how they feel about having this library and making this change. I think it was Claire Levy has something out in the last day or two, who is one of our county commissioners. So if you're listening and you're interested in being involved in this process, there is a kind of a standing body that is working on this, as well as the fact that it's about to be passed over to the county commissioners to decide if they're going to put it up for a vote for the people in Boulder. So again, I'm Frank Dubofsky, and I'm signing off with our discussion this morning with David Farnan. And thanks, everybody, for listening in.
Thank you for having me, Frank.
You are listening to KGNU Boulder, Vember, and Fort Collins.
Support comes from Hofgaard & Associates, a law firm providing estate and business planning as well as probate administration assistance. More information can be found at hofgaardlaw.com. That's HOFGARD law.com.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1915. That was the day British socialist illustrator Walter Crane died. You have probably seen his Art Nouveau-style illustrations. Many celebrate International May Day, memorialize the Haymarket Martyrs of Chicago, or commemorate the Paris Commune. He also published a series of illustrations titled Cartoons for the Cause. That series was produced to commemorate the International Socialist Trade Union Congress of 1896. Born in 1845, Crane apprenticed with the Chartist radical William James Linton. He started his career illustrating children's books, nursery rhymes, and fairy tales. He later traveled to Italy with his wife Mary to continue with book illustrations and portraiture. Upon his return to Britain, he became friends with artist William Morris, whose pamphlet, Art and Socialism, deeply impacted him. Crane soon joined the Art Workers Guild and the Arts and Crafts Society. Together, he and Morris joined the Social Democratic Federation. Crane produced illustrations for its journal, Justice. From there, he helped to found the Socialist League and illustrated its journal, The Commonwealth. When the League failed to gain popularity, he moved on to the Fabian Society, whose members included George Bernard Shaw, H.G. Wells, and Sidney and Beatrice Webb. Crane produced wildly popular images like The Angel of Freedom and published The Claims of Decorative Art. In it, he asserted art could not flourish in a world where wealth was so unfairly distributed. Only under socialism could use and beauty be united. He continued to publish and became principal of the Royal College of Arts in 1898. A strong critic of the British Empire, Crane supported the Labour Party and produced posters each year to celebrate May Day. Labour History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labour History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, Russia's horrendous invasion of Ukraine is providing yet another reminder that when elephants fight, it's the grass that is trampled. We see that not just in the front page casualties, teenage soldiers dying fighting, civilian men, women, and children killed by dropping bombs, but also in the measures that we are told are meant to avert those harms, economic sanctions. Karee Peterson-Smith is the Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He joins us to talk about the problem with seeing sanctions as an alternative to war. Also on the show, in March of 2012, Amazon opened a department dedicated to ferreting out tax breaks and subsidies. In other words, the mega corporation making hundreds of billions of dollars in profit puts in time finding ways to avoid supporting the communities they operate in and to push local governments to divest money from education, housing, and health care to give to a company that doesn't need it. This March, the group Good Jobs First marked that anniversary with a call to end Amazon subsidies. We'll talk with the executive director of Good Jobs First, Greg LeRoy. That's coming up, and we'll get right to it. You're listening to Counterspin, brought to you each week by the Media Watch Group Fair. The Russian elite can't stand the sanctions, crowed a recent piece in The Atlantic. The whine and protest from the country's oligarchs meant that the U.S. and European sanctions were, quote, working as intended to punish Russia's elites for supporting President Vladimir Putin, close quote. They won't starve, the story elaborated, but they, quote, will be unable to maintain their jet-setting luxury lifestyle, close quote. Meanwhile, CNBC viewers were told the West is trying to destroy Russia's economy, and analysts think it could succeed. That piece cited the French finance minister's statement that the aim of the latest round of sanctions was, quote, to cause the collapse of the Russian economy, close quote. So which is it? Inconvenience a few richy riches or bring a country of 145 million people to its knees? Or is there a secret way to immiserate a country without incurring grievous human harm? The current moment provides another chance to examine the role of economic sanctions in conflict. And here to help us think about that is Karee Peterson-Smith. He's the Michael Ratner Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He joins us now by phone from Boston. Welcome back to Counterspin, Karee Peterson-Smith.
I'm so grateful to be here, Jeanine.
Well, thank you. Just like we're told by politicians and by media that weapons like bombs and drones are surgical and that they're targeted, we're also told that sanctions are carefully aimed to hurt only the powerful in order to influence them. Your recent writing engages that storyline because it just doesn't play out that way, does it?
It doesn't. And I think that particularly with sanctions, they're not designed to play out that way. You know, when the Biden administration first was talking about doing sanctions on Russia, they simultaneously talked about targeting Putin and a few oligarchs, and they would use phrases like, to use their language, crippling sanctions. And as you said, you can't have it both ways. You can't say that this is targeted and specific and also talk about attacking the entire Russian economy, which the kind of sanctions that they have pursued